Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, and Merry Christmas!
It's not Merry Christmas yet, Ian, that's next week.
Humbug!
Humbug! It's outrageous. Yeah. Christmas carols, lights in the street, Christmas cards arriving, and it's at least 10 days to go to Christmas.
10 days till Doctor Who Day. But in the meantime, we have the All About Windows Phone Insight podcast, which will answer the mysteries of the universe without any haunted snowman voiced by Ian McKellen. Instead, we've heard Paul Darrow. Rafe, do you know who Paul Darrow is?
No, I don't know who Paul Darrow is.
Blake Seven?
I think I was a bit before my time, Ewan.
Right then.
I mean, I know it's a sci-fi film that's really famous, and it's a bit like the one with the replicant that is a replicant or isn't, and Bruce Willis, or is that something else? No, that's something else. That's Ridley Scott.
Yeah. Ridley Scott's Blake. I'd pay to see Ridley Scott's Blake Seven, though. I will be honest there.
Yeah.
Okay, there we go. There's my Christmas gift present. Rafe's version of Ridley Scott's Blake 7. Perfect. But we're here to talk Windows Phone. What's been going in the last week? And it's been a good one. I mean, it's not been especially exciting, Rafe. Let's be clear on that. But it's been interesting.
Windows Phone, not exciting. How could you say such a thing?
I'm realist, and sometimes we tell it how it is.
Yeah, no, there's been quite a few bits and pieces going on. In some bits of the world, I think it's been quite an exciting week, and we've had some new hardware to look at as well. So we've got quite a bit to get through in this podcast.
Yes, we're going to talk about the Nokia Luma 820 at the end. We've both had our hands on Nokia's mid-range device, would be fair to say.
I think it's actually
it's on the edge, isn't it?
It's at the upper end, because this is a device that costs, you know, £380 SIM-free. You can maybe get it a little bit less than that. So, you know, I actually struggled with it in the review. Do I call it the lower end of the upper tier or something else? So in the end, I sort of chickened out and called it a second-tier device. So I think it qualifies as high-end, but it's not a flagship.
We'll talk a bit more on that shortly, so you've time in the podcast to gather up your opinion so you can shout at your headphones. We've got over-the-air updates, we've got China, we've got lock screens, we've got Angry Birds, we've got Angry Human. Where should we start, Rafe?
Well, shall we start with, the strategically interesting but slightly dull China stuff?
The strategically interesting but slightly dull. In other words, the SIDS bit. So, tell us about the SIDS, Rafe.
Well, this actually is a couple of stories that have come out, and we actually mentioned one of them in the last podcast, and we just got it in time, which was the Nokia Lumia 920T. That was the STL. Now I've completely mangled it like Ewan did last time, but that was the TD SCDMA version of the 920 for China Mobile, and we talked a bit about that one. And actually, it was kind of the start of a Windows Phone week in China, because a couple of days after that, we had an announcement from HTC that they were taking the 8X and the 8S to China. Now, that was interesting because, you know, HTC have already done quite a bit in China with some of their previous handsets, both Androids and Windows Phone. But what caught my eye about this was it's actually on all three of the big operators in China. That's China Mobile, China Unicom, and China Telecom. And that's significant because it actually requires three different variants. China Mobile, as we've just said, requires TD SCDMA. China Unicom is like the rest of the world, if you like, GSM and WCDMA. And China Telecom is CDMA and CDMA 2000. What's not clear is how much the operators are going to be pushing that device. It's not quite the same as the agreement we think with the Nokia 920T, where China Mobile is actually going to be subsidizing it, pushing it into shops, you know, giving it a marketing thing. So the sales won't be so significant, but it just does underline kind of the importance of the China market to a Windows Phone. In fact, you know, several Nokia people and Windows Phone Microsoft people came out and said, actually, China is the biggest single country market for Windows Phone devices. And Stephen Elop, Nokia's CEO, said it's the single biggest country for the Lumia devices. Not altogether surprising, perhaps, when your population is well over a billion and your biggest operator, that's China Mobile, has 700 million subscribers. But nonetheless, it does underline the fact that kind of there's a big opportunity there, and also it's obviously a big growth market as well. But the one that I thought was most interesting in some way as a piece of news was an alliance between Microsoft and China Unicom. That's kind of the second biggest operator in China. It's not quite on the scale of China Mobile. It's sort of 200 million subscribers, but that still makes it the third biggest operator in the world. So, you know, it's all relative, I guess. And what they've come up with is kind of an industry alliance to push Windows Phone and the Windows platform in general. So it's kind of tablets, phones, and also computers. But the big emphasis is on Windows Phone, and some of the kind of launch partners with this were Nokia, HTC, Samsung, Huawei, ZTE, Asus, Lenovo, Qualcomm, Intel, kind of the usual suspects of people you might expect to get involved in this. And it's not entirely clear what this is about. You know, it's the usual thing with the alliance. They talk about how it's going to ease the connection between the various partners and be able to talk to each other, and it'll result in more innovative products and shorter times to market. In practice, what that means is China Unicom, the operator, is giving it a strategic push or a strategic priority. That means it'll be doing more marketing. It will be sort of emphasizing those handsets over some of the others. And this is kind of a real sign, I think, of what Microsoft and Nokia have talked about many times, and we've seen some evidence for, but not an overwhelming amount, of the operators themselves wanting the third ecosystem to get established. And I think it's particularly interesting to see this in China, because it is such a big market and it's, you know, very dynamic. I mean, at the moment, you talked about this last time, the market share of Android being absolutely massive in China, but that's happened relatively quickly. You know, Symbian used to be a market leader, and you know, if anything we know from China is those market share patterns can change very quickly. And certainly some of the analysts seem quite positive about this alliance. And I would be willing to bet this won't be the first kind of big operator tie-up that we see. So I think this could have a fairly interesting impact on Windows Phone sales in China in the next year, and could be quite a potential for growth there.
The one that I found interesting in all of this, and this goes back to actually the China Telecom one here, Rafe, is that China Telecom had been in very public negotiations with Apple to carry the iPhone 5 as well. And the subsidy issue was one that's coming up. Subsidy issue is also one. I'll come back to very briefly on T-Mobile in the USA as well. But the part of me got the feeling that the Lumia 920 basically drove the better bargain in terms of the subsidy that it was wanting for the device. Now, whether that's going to have a detrimental effect short term is unclear, but I think long term that's a very good strategy to play. If it becomes an Android versus Windows world in China, there's going to be a lot of people very, very happy with that, because even a second place over there is going to be on the order of 10%.
That's right. And what you're talking about here, for people who, you know, might not understand, is when you're selling a phone as an operator, you're generally providing some kind of subsidy. In some markets that doesn't exist. In some markets it's very big, like the UK, where we get pretty much all our phones for free. And the same thing is starting to happen in China. You know, previously it was entirely kind of a SIM-free market. But with the 3G phones coming in, the decision was made, it's kind of a regulatory thing, to allow subsidies to try and encourage the uptake of more advanced phones and 3G phones. And so you're seeing the operators in China invest a lot more in subsidies. But of course that has to come from somewhere, and Apple traditionally has actually taken quite a big chunk of, not, it's not so much the subsidy as in the total monthly bill when selling an iPhone. So it comes out of the same, you know, pocket as the subsidy, and so therefore you might have a lower subsidy on the iPhone. And it's kind of really about margins, you know, how much you're willing to accept. And Apple wants high margins on its products and has got them with the iPhone, you really impressively so. Nokia's probably gone and said, look, you know, we've got a product that's competitive with the iPhone, and we're willing to take a smaller margin on this and kind of take a smaller piece of the profit pie, if you like. And obviously China Mobile has gone, yes, please. Now, you know, if you're a cynic, you can look at it and say, you know, it's almost a spoiler tax for the iPhone. It's trying to force Apple to the negotiating table. But I think you can also take, you know, the operator is quite powerful, and is probably becoming more so in China. And it's saying, you know, I want to partner with Microsoft and Nokia rather than Apple, and I'm willing to push that. And it's kind of what I was talking about, the establishment of a third ecosystem. I'm sure they will still get the iPhone in time, and there's been some record pre-orders on some of the other networks in China that are getting the iPhone 5. So, you know, I think you can take a cynical view, which is too cynical, but don't be too optimistic. You know, this is fantastic news for Nokia. You know, they've beaten the iPhone. It's not so much that. But it does give them a very good shot, as you say, establishing themselves as kind of the second smartphone player. And in China, that could be, as you say, hugely significant.
Also want to touch on T-Mobile USA, now that we've actually come up to subsidies. the network, I don't know if you saw this one, right, but the network actually announced how they're going to be marketing themselves for 2013. And they've literally, you know, broken the link between subsidy and monthly bill. The majority of handsets that you buy from T-Mobile USA now, you will buy the handset on finance, which you will pay up monthly, and then you will buy the monthly plan, because something like 80% of T-Mobile's customers in America were just using their value plan, which is only about $15 to $20 a month or something. But they were bringing their own handsets. So T-Mobile just going, you know, fine, we're not going to have the majority of our handsets available as subsidized. You will deal with them as two separate things, the handset and the monthly bill. And it's a nice plucky move from the from one of the lower networks in the USA. But I'm intrigued to see how this goes on when people actually see the value of the phone. You know, people want to have an iPhone 5 and T-Mobile, that's fine. They will pay the full ticket price and they will pay it back over the 2 years, which you do now in essence anyway, but now it's going to be up front.
Yes, I mean, I think this is a courageous decision.
But actually, all the British listeners now going, I understand that one.
what I mean by that is, I think actually it's the right thing to do, but I wonder whether it can overcome the basic human psychology, which is what makes subsidies so attractive in the first place. That said, you know, we have seen in some of the really competitive markets, and the UK is probably a good example of this, of how SIM-only deals have, you know, come to prominence in the last couple of years, more and more people using them because they recognise the same thing. And actually providing, you know, the financing as T-Mobile is planning to, effectively gives you the advantage of SIM-only, but you can still get a handset for cheap up front, because, you know, you're paying it off separately. I wonder for them, you know, the differences in administration costs and all of that, whether it saves. I think for consumers, it's, you know, a good deal. It's a good idea because, you know, a lot of people I know, you know, they have their handset and they're paying out on a monthly basis for it. And they kind of get to upgrade time, think, oh, maybe I'll get a new handset. But then they leave it a few months and that becomes 6 months and it becomes a year. Not everyone, sort of, you know, people listening to this podcast, I'll suggest, who as soon as they've got an upgrade, they'll be thinking about what handset to get, and a month won't go without, you know, going and getting it. But for others, quite a significant period can go by when you're kind of paying the subsidy almost unnecessarily. And so by splitting them up like this, you know, it's a better deal for consumers. So I hope this unit really takes off, because I think it's better for consumers. It's more transparent about the pricing. It gives people a much better idea about the cost of a handset. Because, you know, one thing that subsidies have really done is made it really artificial. And, you know, it's actually a problem in the US, I think, because there's very little distinction between mid-tier smartphones and high-end smartphones, because really it's just about the upfront cost. I think the best illustration of this is the Lumia 920 and the Lumia 820 on AT&T. You know, you basically will have to get the same smartphone contract whatever you do. You know, you can't go for a lower tier one. It's not like, you know, the UK, where we have maybe five or six tiers of, you know, smartphone contracts that you can realistically use, from kind of maybe £20 upwards, or even £15 for the very low-end smartphones with not a lot of data. And so, you know, you're a consumer walking into an AT&T store and you're offered the Lumia 820 for free. Well, that's great. But here you can pay an extra $50 up front, or $99, depends if there's a special promotion on, and get the 920. And I think most people would go, it's, you know, if size isn't an issue, pay the extra $50 and get the 920. But that is somewhat artificial. Of course, that changes once you break that link between, you know, subsidy and the contract. So yeah, really interesting move.
Right then, what else do we have going on? Well, over-the-air updates. We've always known that there's been a hook in the code since Windows Phone 7. It's never been used. Dramatic note, until now. See, that's where we would have had Paul Darrow, by the way, Rafe.
Right, okay.
Saying until now, you repeat, until now. Because now we have an over-the-air update, and it seems to be working. The HTC 8X is the first to benefit that. Again, the signature Windows Phone device getting another little first therein. But I don't think Microsoft are playing politics in this. I just think that HTC have had the code ready and tested before Nokia have.
Yes, I think that's probably right. You know, this would have been in testing for a while. I suspect actually it might have been finalised even before the devices were kind of hitting the shop shelves, but testing being what it is, it takes a while to happen. But as you say, it is of note that this is kind of the first over-the-air update, and it's worth saying actually the over-the-air update function has just changed, or really been introduced for the first time with Windows Phone 8. There was a theoretical possibility with it in 7, and there were a few bits and pieces that were updated entirely over-the-air, but most of them, as you kind of hinted at, needed the Zoom desktop. So what happens here is you're alerted kind of in the same way as you were before to an update, but rather than having to connect to a PC, you can just go through the screens, download it either over Wi-Fi or cellular data, and install it. The whole process takes between 30 and 40 minutes. Obviously, that depends on the size of the update and what you're using to do the download, and then you're up and running with the new update.
Indeed, yes. We're probably going to see more of that. We'll probably see this for the Lumia range come out as well at some point, probably just before or after Christmas, you think, Rafe?
It's difficult to tell with timing, but yes, this is a platform-specific... it's a platform update, not a manufacturer-specific update. So, you know, undoubtedly it will roll out to all devices in time. Nokia, you know, have talked about software updates coming, and kind of you always know there's a software update coming. So they might well put a Nokia update with this Microsoft update and kind of roll them out at the same time. And I would expect that to happen, you know, sometime early next year, but have no specific information on that. We should probably mention a few of the new features here. Were there any that particularly caught your eye, Ewan?
You're thinking about the resume on Wi-Fi, I would guess.
I am, because I know this is something that's bothered you, and it hasn't really bothered
me. No, it's bothered Steve. I just took the battery out and started my phone again. Because I can, because I've got Lumia 820 now. Yes, the Wi-Fi resolution one is one that can be frustrating for many people. Previously, it just took time to log back on when you switched your device back on from standby. Now, it's far faster, it's far simpler, and it's one of these sort of hidden things in the background. It's like, now it's been taken care of, it's not really an issue. It doesn't really deserve a bullet point, because that's how it's meant to work. It just works. And that's always been one of the things that I've really liked about Windows Phone. You know, when there are things that should just work, they, most of the time, just work.
Just to give a bit more detail on this, this is the idea that when you, underneath the lock screen, when the screen turns off, Wi-Fi used to disconnect. This was a problem that it took between 2 and 7 seconds for it to start up again. So if you went straight into an app and asked for a connection, sometimes it would fail with an error message. And the problem that some people had, it would switch to cellular data and then not switch back to Wi-Fi later, which, you know, could be a problem if you had a data cap or, you know, just being slow for whatever reason. I have to say, I didn't ever come across this problem all that much. I did have the occasional thing where it would complain about not having a data connection, and then the Wi-Fi would finish connecting it and it would be fine. So it's kind of a nice to have thing. But I'm not sure whether I'll turn this on or not, because obviously keeping a Wi-Fi connection active all the time does have an impact on battery life. It shouldn't be that substantial. I reckon it will just be a few percentage points of the battery over the course of 24 hours. So it's kind of a decision for you to make. I guess it's like keeping Bluetooth or NFC on and off all the time. It's kind of a personal thing about how much it annoys you. But I think it was an important one to get out, and it's good to see it delivered as quick as possible. The other thing I think that was interesting in this update, there were a whole bunch of updates around the text functionality. Drafts was a good one. I like that because I quite often get halfway through writing a text message and then go and do something else or get interrupted. And what happens with this is if you're doing that and you back out or switch away from the message composition or the reply screen, it will save it to drafts and you can go back and finish it off later. If you've got lots of text threads going on, that's great because there's one place to go and kind of see those unsent messages. For other people, they probably won't use it because they're kind of better organized and they always finish off a text message. But I guess the one that might get used a little bit more by people is this idea that you can do a text reply to an incoming call. So rather than just hitting the ignore button and hang it up, you can do a text reply which will hang the call up and send it to your voicemail, and then give you the option to send a text message to the person who was calling you. And there's up to, I think it's 4 predefined messages, or you can write your own one. Those predefined messages can be edited in the settings of the phone application. So it's kind of a quick way to politely ignore a call, but then send a message saying, I'll call you back when I'm free, or please text me, or I'm in a meeting, or whatever it's going to be. So that's a nice extra. And also in the messaging application, when you're selecting text messages, that's when you've got the check boxes down the left-hand side of the screen. Previously, you had to select them one by one if you're doing a mass delete. Now there's an option to select all. So it's a pretty minor update all in all, and there are some bug fixes in the background. We think this has fixed the problem with rebooting on the HTC 8X that some people were having, and no doubt that would apply to other Windows Phone devices. But you know, everything went very smoothly, over-the-air update working fine. And what I'd really like to see is maybe, you know, a constant presence of these updates, little fixes coming in, new features being added, because I think that would do wonders for kind of the reputation of the platform if there was this idea that new stuff was coming along every now and then. And, you know, let's say maybe once a quarter or every couple of months you see something like this. So come on, Microsoft, we'll have the next one of these updates maybe sometime in February, and then after that sort of talk about April, May time. And, you know, that way you keep a lot of interest, but also you can fix some of the kind of missing holes, which I think we'd have to acknowledge are still there in Windows Phone 8.
I think we would, yes. But nice to see that the firmware update itself has rolled out smoothly. Coming from the Symbian world, we kind of expect that. But it's nice to see this. Microsoft went, there it goes, and everybody's went, ah, oh, I've got it. It's working.
Yeah, well, we'll have to wait until it's available on all variants and all devices to kind of declare that a success. But yes, nice. much better than having to connect to a PC. I mean, these days, a lot of people have a 3G plan where they can download an update or they can do it on Wi-Fi, and having to connect to a computer felt rather archaic.
Stop being humbuggy. I was being nice to them for once. these poor Redmond developers are having to work over the holidays because more people are submitting applications. Woe is them.
40% up on the level with Windows Phone 7, I understand, since kind of the November release of Windows Phone 8. And yes, they're working every day apart from Christmas Day, I think it is.
Yeah, they'll miss Doctor Who. They'll also miss Downton Abbey, so there's at least some benefit to it. Yeah, there we go. Dave, very briefly though, that 40% number, Microsoft have given out a lot of numbers over the last couple of weeks, and they've all been percentages or relative to something else. But what I found interesting is that when you look at different ways of doing the stats, and Duplex being one of them, our back-end system as well, is Microsoft are pretty accurate. You know, there's a 3.5 to 4 times jump with people using applications and buying the handsets. There's this 40% jump in applications submissions. So even though Microsoft aren't giving us concrete numbers, there's lots of anecdotal evidence that they're actually giving us genuine numbers.
That's true. And of course, they're giving these percentage numbers because they don't want to give out concrete real numbers, because then in a comparison to the other platforms, they look bad. And we've commented on this before. It's kind of inevitable.
We sold 10 phones last year. We sold 40 this year.
Exactly. But it's kind of inevitable when you're, you know, starting, you know, at a later date, it's going to take a little while to get going on the life cycle. And we've commented on this when we talked about app numbers, and the same applies to devices. So, you know, you can understand both sides. That people want, you know, the actual concrete numbers, but there's a terrible temptation to say, oh, they only sold X million, whereas, you know, he's talking, oh, well, in the same point of the product life cycle, i.e. Android back in 2009 or whatever date you want to choose, sold. But of course, the market's different. So comparing those numbers, you're never going to get a realistic thing because the market's changed or a different point in the product life cycle. But all the evidence does suggest that the Windows Phone 8 launch has sort of gone pretty positively in terms of, you know, devices being sold, apps being downloaded and installed. And certainly some of the developers I've spoken to have all seen a jump in numbers. We've seen a jump in numbers as well. You can be maybe a little cynical about this, because people have been talking about Nokia handset sales and how well they've been doing.
I'm not being cynical in this show today. No. Nope.
Well, I'm going to be a bit bar humbug then. And, you know, because people have talked about all these sold out sales signs in shops and everything else. And, you know, certainly they're flying off the shelves in places like Clove and Expanses when they do get the SIM-free stock in the UK. And that applies elsewhere. But partly that probably reflects the kind of limited availability, not and how deep-seated that demand is not quite so clear, because it's kind of producing less devices than, you know, it could probably sell. And that was because they maybe got a better handle on risk. I mean, last time round, they probably produced more handsets than they were able to sell. That's part of the reason why the prices dropped relatively quickly. And there's still, you know, 800s being sold off at what I would call a bargain price on pay-as-you-go in various countries. You know, it's also, it takes a while to ramp up when you're selling a new device. And so they're easily going to exceed the numbers that they did, you know, this time last year. Nokia, for example, I'm pretty sure HTC will be doing the same thing. But of course, we're a year later, so it's never a simple they're doing better or they're doing worse. You know, we'll have to look at the numbers in terms of devices sold, which will be one metric, but also you look at things like profit margin and underlying demand, everything like that. But I'm pretty sure we're going to see Nokia make a comment about they would have been able to sell more devices if they'd been able to make them maybe a bit constrained by component supply. So that'll be something to watch out for in mid-January when we get the sort of Q4 results.
At which point I will put on Comic Book Guy's voice and go, best Christmas sales ever.
Exactly.
of Windows Phone 8 devices. Right, okay, Rafe. I might not be cynical, but I can be angry. And I can be angry about birds, or I can be angry about letters.
Well, let's start with birds, because I think you're going to be angry in a good way.
I am, yes. Angry Birds Space, Angry Birds Star Wars. They're never coming to Windows Phone 7 because there's too much complicated underlying SDK graphic-y stuff, programmy magic that can't go on. We don't have the special incantations in our SDKs that allow us to port it easily, so we'll never have it. It's just happening on Windows Phone. Here you go. Here's Angry Birds and all of that on Windows Phone 7. Yay!
Yeah, thanks, Rovio, for making me sound really stupid, having declared it wasn't going to happen.
Hold on, let's do that line again. Thanks, Rovio, for making Rafe sound very stupid like that wasn't going to happen. See? Not being cynical this show, remember?
No, no. Well, it's good news. I'm a little bit surprised, but I think there's a lot of happy Windows Phone 7.5 users out there. You can now get Angry Birds Space and Angry Birds Star Wars on their Windows Phone.
And Rafe, it's going to sell more Angry Birds Star Wars stuffed toys, so therefore it was a good investment.
Well, something tells me that Rovio didn't pay for this. I suspect this is one that Nokia coughed up for. But yeah, nonetheless, kind of good news. And, you know, I think actually this is something we might see a bit more of in that, you know, Windows Phone 7.5 and as it becomes Windows Phone 7.8, given a bit more life than we're expecting. It's something we need to be careful about on the site, that we continue to cover all of that. And we have had a couple of comments about, don't forget it, and we haven't forgotten it. We do realise there's a lot of you out there with Lumia 800s, the HTC Titans or the Radars and everything else. There's even a few people with Samsung Omnias as well.
I believe there's three people with the Dell Venue Pro as well.
Yes, we do feel quite sorry for them, because you're almost certainly not going to get 7.8, but we'll see.
But it was a nice phone. It's a nice, still stylish handset, but, you know, you're coupling it with the Windows Phone OS, which has the best mobile keyboard out there. Right, what was the other one? Alpha Jax.
Oh, dear. I think this is going to be the bad kind of angry.
Ooh. Actually, you know what? I'm not angry. I'm not angry strictly Alpha Jax. I'm angry at the entire games industry.
Okay, so we've gone from a little bit of anger to an entire industry. That's great.
Yes, because of something called grade inflation. And grade inflation basically means that this 0-100 score that you have in gaming sites isn't actually a 0-100 score. It's a 75-95 score. And 95 is acknowledged as you're giving us lots of advertising money. Well, and 75 is, it's a bit rubbish, but hey, you're going to be releasing something nice next month and we don't want to upset you. Okay, I was a bit cynical in this show. I am sorry, I finally reached my point. Because, Rafe, way back when we started All About, we actually had a set of guidelines on the website on what our scoring would mean. And we're going to need to find it again over Christmas, because I always had this rule that if I can recommend something, it scores more than 50%. And if I can't recommend something, then it has to score below 50%. And no app is allowed to score 50% because we have to make a concrete decision on them.
That's right. Yes, we have had that. And most of the time we've actually been reviewing games that have scored over 50%, so it's not been a problem. But I noticed you did manage to kick off a few things in the comments with your Alpha Jax review, because you gave it a 40-something percent. And I sat there feeling slightly horrified, because I thought, well, I'd recommend it. I've been enjoying playing it. But then I sort of read the review, and it's really all about the Xbox notifications and the way Alpha Jax handles them, isn't it?
Yeah. So, I mean, the first thing is, black and white, I cannot recommend Alpha Jax. Therefore, by our scoring system, which we've now had in place for 12 years, which allows us to compare over periods, I can't recommend it. But it's very close to being recommended. That's why it's in the 40 band, the 40 to 50. But I can't recommend it yet. And this is the thing. There are so many games like this out there already. There's Words with Friends, there's Word Fuses, Word by Post. If the whole system worked, it would just be average. There's nothing in Alpha Jax that makes it stand out. Now, I know some people will then say, oh, but it's got Xbox Live achievements on it. Well, yeah, but they're expected in an Xbox Live title. Just having something that's asked for doesn't automatically give you another 5 or 10 percentage points. If you were really good with the achievements or you were being innovative with them, that's when you would score more. But at the moment, you know, Alpha Jax hits the expectations of what you would expect in an average Scrabble clone game, perfectly. So it's an average game. But then when you look at how it interacts, how the expected mode of operation of a play-by email, play-by post, play-by turn game going over the internet, it's loud, it's shouty. You know, people are constantly giving you their first move to play a random game. Now, in other times, when you want to play a random game, you play, I want to play a random game, and it goes, I'll find you a player and get back to you. Here it goes, I want to play a random game. Right, I'm going to ask Jim. And it runs over and says, Jim, someone wants to play a random game with you. And Jim has to say no, even though he's not asked to play a random game. You know, what should happen is you should go into a sort of central holding pool, going, I want to play a random game. And then Jim would come and go, I want to play a random game. And you'd be paired up. No, here it's, someone wants to play with you. Someone wants to play with you. Why won't you play with them? Play with them, play with them, play with them. I'll tell them now. Play with them, play with them, play with them, play with them, play with them. Oh, by the way, Rafe's made a move and it's Kintar and he's absolutely whipping your bum at this. Somebody wants to play a random game. Somebody wants to play a random game. Somebody's asking why you're not playing their random game. And on and on and on. And you know what? When you have glance and go, and your glance is just made up of people going, play Alpha Jacks with me, it just doesn't work. You know, and that's enough to... it completely took me out of the Xbox Live element. You know, it took me completely out of the, this is my phone, it's meant to be my companion. It wasn't. My phone was no longer a companion. My phone was that sort of shouty person that you have to share an apartment with when you go to Cannes for MWC because you forgot to book two separate hotel rooms.
thank you. You're reminding us of past history there. Yes, I get all of that, but I think it still works pretty well. But
it works. I just can't recommend it.
Yeah, and I will say it is the launch week of the title, or the launch couple of weeks, and so probably this issue is particularly acute. And having looked at the first thing, I thought, ooh, I've got loads of friends inviting me for games, and then it turned out that they were just random strangers, which was really quite sad. But on the plus side, I think this will kind of die down, but having got used to it, I actually think you're spot on, Ewan, here, because it spoils it if you've got other Xbox notifications going on, because it kind of devalues that. You know, you look, ooh, I've got an Xbox notification. Oh, it's just another one of the Alpha Jacks ones. It's not,
and it doesn't even have an icon of the game either. You know, if it's Xbox Alert Box said it had an Alpha Jacks icon to help you differentiate the stream, then that might help, but it doesn't have that. Yeah. And yes, okay, it's the launch, but it's an Xbox Live title.
It is, yeah. And it, we should say, it'll be fairly easy to fix this by, as you say, kind of making this match up and go into a pool or offering some kind of filtering option. Do you think there's any prospect of an update for this, Ewan?
I have said on the review and I've said in the comments as well, I will look at this again in January to see if they have fixed it. And, you know, when an alert comes in, I will check that as well. It's probably somebody asking you to play Alpha Jacks, but I think it should be an easy fix. But I think it's something that they should have spotted beforehand. I think it's something they should have thought about how the game is going on, because it's not as if Alpha Jacks is brand new to Windows Phone. It's been out there for some time. You know, the expectation of how these sort of games should be played has been out there in various titles for some time. Alpha Jacks broke the covenant with the gamer. That's why I can't recommend it.
Okay, well, that's probably enough ranting about that. Do you want to rant about something else, Ewan?
Yes, I do. Why is Heil's Army getting to sing in the Swiss Eurovision Song for Europe this Saturday? Why is Jesse Rich getting to sing? Why is Anthony Bighead getting to sing? And Marcelo is not getting to sing his song.
Could we maybe have a rant about Windows Phone rather than the Eurovision Song Contest?
You didn't get me a purple case for my Lumia 820. It's white.
Yes. Well, the purple one is rather lesser spotted. In fact, I don't think I've seen it in the wild at all. I saw it at the launch and I included a picture in our recent review, and it is rather purple. Gorgeous in person. But Ewan has got a particular fondness for the colour purple. But I would have thought you'd want one of the shells with the wireless charging built in, Ewan.
Oh, okay, right then. Let me do second round then. Rafe, you haven't sent me a wireless charging pad.
Ah, okay. Well, that's true. But we only ever had one in review, and I've got it at the moment. So, yes, tough.
Oh, you're killing me here, man. You're killing me. Right, let's talk about the 820, though. I like this. It's still a bit big for me, but it's just, it feels right. And we talked a lot about the 8X and the strange angular edge and everything. But the Lumia 820, to me, feels right. Now, that could be because the buttons are in roughly the same place as the Lumia 800 that I'm used to, so it's not that much of a jump in my muscle memory to actually picking up the device. But it's cute. I like it.
Yes, well, it's interesting you say that. I mean, I was writing the hardware review for the 820, which is now on the site.
You were writing hardware review. You were writing War and Peace.
Well, yes, it was quite a long review, but that's how we roll. And the thing was, I actually struggled to kind of find an easy way to describe the design, then sum it up. And essentially, it's kind of a middle of the road device. And I hesitate to use the word boring, but it is a bit conservative. It's kind of normal, but I think it's a very good thing in this kind of second tier device, because there's a lot to like about it. And actually, some of the, you know, if you want a bit of excitement, that does come in with these removable shells, of which there's three different types. We talked about them before, but just as
we have the white shell on the review units here, so they've got sort of black and white reverse monochrome effect going on.
Yeah, which is quite nice, especially if you put it into kind of high contrast mode, you can kind of get a really nice black and white effect. But they do come in various colours as well, including kind of the typical you know, Lumias, reds and yellows, and then there's the cyan version as well. But there's also these wireless charging covers. You know, every 820 is enabled for wireless charging, but you have to get a cover with one of these Qi charging coils in it for it to work. And then there's also active shells, and these offer a bit more protection. They put in it's actually another plastic, but it's a kind of rubbery light plastic, and so it's better at absorbing shocks. And so if you know, drop it on the edge of the screen or on a corner, it's more likely to survive. So I kind of like that differentiation through shells. I think that's a clever idea. It's kind of a shame that they didn't put the wireless charging stuff in the active shells as well. We haven't actually seen those on the market. I've only seen one in person briefly, and it looks very similar. It's just kind of got black highlights around the edges instead. But, you know, kind of a clever idea of using that design element to, you know, customization recalls, you know, the Nokia feature phones of yore. But actually there's some real functional differences between them all as well. But going back to the 820, the size and feel in the hand, it's actually the slimmest Lumia N out so far. It's just under a centimetre, you know, deep, so it's 9.9 millimetres, I think it was. I actually think that's the spot at which how thick a device is stops really mattering for most people. You know, some people are always going to like the thinner one, and the 8X still feels like a slimmer device, and in some ways, are, you know, still more elegant as a piece of design. But in some ways, I'd say the 820 is more practical. Part of that's button position, but also it feels comfortable in the hand. I like the fact it's got round edges all the way around, so it kind of reinforces this idea of it's not boring. It's kind of this middle of the road handset. Is it the safe choice? Possibly. I mean,
it's the Ford Sierra of phones, isn't it?
It is, but actually it's, you know, a beautifully implemented bit of design from the way the back cover comes off. And yes, it's a bit fiddly, but when you take it off covers or battery covers, you're used to having a phone that, you know, squeaks a bit or doesn't feel quite right. You put the cover back on and actually it feels like a unibody showing. You know, the build quality is that good. Yet you obviously get the advantage. You can take out the battery, you could potentially swap the battery over. There's, you know, the SIM port and the micro SD card slot are kind of protected in there. You haven't got ugly lines on the edge of the case. And mentioned micro SD, that's another bit of added flexibility. That's used for auxiliary storage on Windows Phone 8. We talk about it more on the site, so you can go and have a look at it there, but really for your media files. But I think there's a lot of people who will like the idea of that, who've come from phones where they're used to that. And with only 8 gigabytes of internal memory, you do need that supplementary stuff for your music and for your video. And I would say that, you know, micro SD slot is kind of, it adds an added degree of flexibility that, you know, really some of the other Windows Phone 8 devices don't have. And so it's kind of this example of where sometimes these second tier or these mid devices can actually offer, you know, something that the top end ones don't. And as I said in my review, there's legitimate reason to choose this, you know, for these design decisions, these hardware choices, not just because it's a cheaper version of, you know, the flagship device. And screen's another example of that. Yes, it's lower resolution, it's the traditional 480 by 800. Surprisingly, and I'll be interested to see what Ewan thinks about this, because he's tried an 8X as well. I didn't notice nearly as much as I thought I would. I guess, you know, the pixel density is still high up there, it's 260 odd. But also, I guess it's the way that the Windows Phone UI doesn't use that many small elements. Where you maybe notice this is when you're reading an ebook or web browsing or email, you know, where there's smaller text. But it was much less of an issue than I thought, and it uses AMOLED technology now compared to the 920 or the LCD on some of the HTC devices. That's kind of more vibrant colours, and I know some people prefer that. I honestly don't really have a preference between the two. I kind of get used to whatever it is, but Windows Phone does look great on an AMOLED screen because of the extensive use of black, assuming you're using the dark theme, of course, because with the AMOLED technology, you know, it's a true black rather than kind of slightly off grey black, if you like. So it does make a difference. So, Ewan, I mean, you've used the screen on both these. Was this a big factor for you?
The place that I noticed it is when you're playing music and you have the playback controls, mm-hmm. it sometimes looks a little bit fuzzy at the top. So I think there's some areas in the applications where they need to think about the choice of fonts and how the font's rendering. Perhaps there's an issue with clear type going on here in the background. But on the whole, I never felt that that the extra pixels on the 8X were noticeable. You know, it just seemed to be, yeah, that looks about right. It's just 24 hours with the 820 here, let's be fair here. But, it looks about right. You know, I've not sat there, I'm not physically counting them. So, to me, the screen resolution at the moment is not a big issue. I know it's there. But, you know, the difference between the screens on Windows Phone 8, between the 1280 screens and the 100 screens, it's not as noticeable as it would be on, say, Android devices. Picking up something like the Sony Xperia T recently, you can really feel the extra pixels. Or it's more a case of that when you go onto a smaller screen Android device, you feel the crunch of having less pixels. And I think that's the difference here. You know, by having a minimalist user environment on Windows Phone 8, by using typography rather than, you know, physical spacing, your typography determines the spacing, and everything scales quite nicely. And that's a bit of really good design. The point is, we shouldn't really be noticing the difference in pixels as much as you would on, say, a 27-inch monitor.
Yeah.
Also, this isn't a 27-inch monitor. This is something that goes in your pocket.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I do think once you get past the 4.3-inch screen size, it probably does become more of an issue because, you know, that's when the pixel density is coming back down again. But it was actually the thing that surprised me most about the 820, because obviously when you've got a lower-cost device, which is what the 820 is, you do have to make some cuts. And I think things like the camera, that's fair enough, and knocking down the internal memory, fair enough. Maybe it's a lower resolution front-facing camera, yep, fair enough. The design and the materials, you know, you're going to have cost savings there. The screen is one area where I'm always a little bit reluctant to endorse something like that, simply because, you know, it is something you use all the time on the phone. It's, you know, an absolute essential. But I was really surprised it wasn't as bad as I was expecting. And actually, it gets to the point, okay, unless I'm doing them side by side, I'm not going to notice a big difference. So, you know, people will have to try this out for themselves, but I don't think it's a reason not to buy the 820. You know, if you're concerned about, you know, specs, you're going to be looking at buying the 920 anyway. And I actually think probably on the 820, the bigger issue possibly could be the camera, especially if you're coming from a Symbian device or one with a good camera. It's not that it's a bad camera. It's just, it's a step down from the top tier, but as I say, you have to cut somewhere. And one thing I think is very noticeable about the 820, and I'd be interested to get your take on this, Ewan, having used an 800 for the last year, is it's a big upgrade from the 800, far more than the year's time would suggest. You know, there's improvements in pretty much every department. Windows Phone 8's kind of not famous for, but it's well known for the fact there isn't all that much in the way of front-facing new user stuff that's obvious. There's actually a whole bunch of changes under the hood, and we're going to talk about that in a future podcast. And there's some really nice bits of kind of usability changes, but actually the hardware itself has really come on leaps and bounds. You see it in the camera, the screen's much better, you know, the quality of the device, the quality of the audio is much better, and so it's far more than a year would suggest. So it does kind of, I think, reflect, you know, an increasing kind of maturity to the Windows Phone products from Nokia. And I'm talking about Nokia rather than some of the other manufacturers here, but I think actually Nokia's kind of stepped above some of the other manufacturers a little bit as well. I mean, not surprising when they're focusing on it solely. And I guess it's kind of a continuation of that story of the first time around with the first generation, the 810, the 710, and to an extent the 900. They were developed, you know, very quickly, sort of in, I guess, 9-10 months, whereas these have had not quite a full development cycle, which, you know, can be anything up to two or even 3 years, but certainly they've had longer to kind of gestate and sort of get finished. I mean, have you noticed that in the 24 hours with the 820, Ewan, at all, that you kind of, I guess, a higher quality of product, more so than you might guess from, you know, because everything improves year on year. But Is it a big jump?
It is and it isn't. I could hand this to someone who's used Windows Phone 7 and they would be instantly at home with it. And they would know where things are. But there are subtle changes that are going through. And most of them are positive. I do have one negative one I shall come back to and leave you in suspense very slightly. Everything looks sharper. The screen technology is certainly improved over the 800. Although, again, remember, that's an 800 screen. It's been lived in for a good 14 months. So there will be some burnout and, you know, it will be a dimmer screen. It feels snappier. Things moving around feel snappier as well. The HTC had that as well on the 8X. And things have been moved. So I could be really ADHD and just go, why have you moved, the flight mode, four lines down in the settings bar? That's wrong. That's really confused me. Why is it harder to get to battery saver? Oh, you've just destroyed my entire world. But it feels more robust. It does feel like lessons have been learned. But ask me to put my finger on things that have improved. At the moment, all I can go is, it just feels better. And that's a rubbish thing for a commentator to do. But it's a sort of holistic effect that you want in a new handset. You want to pick up a handset and go, it does everything my old one does and I feel comfortable with it. But it's better.
Yeah, to be fair, I'm putting Ewan on the spot here because he hasn't had very long with a handset. So we'll come back to this.
There is one issue I do have.
Go on then.
Okay. And I wasn't sure about this on the 8X. And I let it pass because of the screen size and the physical size of the device. But there's less space for your live tiles. If you open up the first screen and you're looking at the top of the live tiles on Windows Phone 7, you're able to see almost 4x2 on your grid of squares.
Ah, right. Okay? Yes.
Right. So if you now open up the initial screen on Windows Phone 8, you can see three full squares and a half. So you've actually lost 12.5% of the live tile area because you've lost the right-hand gutter. Now, that means that my medium live tiles now feel too big and the small live tiles feel too small. I want a tile in the middle. if I could actually just squish it down slightly and bring the gutter back, because the thing was, I really like the live tile system, and on the 800, the live tiles were glanceable. They were the right size. There's the right balance between information and graphic. Here, the sizes went a little bit more, so you could get more information, you could get more graphics, but you can't. It's just the icons again, and it's went up to a 4.3-inch screen, and I can cope with that. I just hold the phone slightly further away from me so I get the same actual size, but it's showing me less information. And it took me a while to work out what was going on. And yes, it means I can put in a line of half-size tiles and get the same number of tiles back. But it just, that's the point where I pick it up and I look at it and go, you feel wrong. You feel dirty. You should feel ashamed of yourself because you're doing something that's making my life worse than the last phone. You're not as good as your older brother.
Yeah. Okay, so you and some got quite involved with the size of his start screen that I actually really like.
The size of my start screen.
Okay, the tiles on the start screen.
Yes, thank you.
I actually really like the fact that the gutter's gone. I think it looks more elegant, but of course, they've increased the width of the tiles very slightly, and that means the height's increased as well. I personally think this is compensated by having the kind of the small tile size, which actually means I have more on my kind of first bit of the screen before I have to start scrolling. And especially some of the small ones, you can actually have the alert numbers appear on them. So I have, the gaming tile, for example, as a small tile, but still get the visible alerts. But it's an interesting one. There are, as you say, some subtle differences on the software. I was mainly talking about hardware, but as I say, Ewan hasn't had long with the handset. We'll get him to talk about that maybe once he's used it for a couple of weeks.
There's something else I thought was missing.
Okay, go on.
You don't have... And I can understand why this wouldn't be the case in unibody devices, but there wasn't a little place that you could loop through a little wrist strap.
Yes, I have to
know. Yeah, you remember, you go back to all your older handsets that were quite active and everything, and you took the battery cover off and everything. There was a little bit you could hook a wrist strap on and put it through the plastic so you could put it on your wrist and, it wouldn't fall away and everything. And I'm just looking through, and there isn't a space for a wrist strap on any of these new Windows Phone 8 devices, right?
Yeah, that's true. It's one of the things that is missing. I'm just looking through some of the other devices I've got sitting around, and actually that's true of things like the 610 and I think the 710 as well. I guess changing trends, but that's an interesting one because I know you, I mean, do you still use a strap where you've got it on your phone?
I love using a strap all the time, Ray.
I probably walked into that one. Anyway, I think we're probably drawing to a close for this particular podcast. We do want to come back and talk about the Lumia 820 a bit more, but it's only fair to give Ewan a couple of weeks of using it so we can talk about kind of what the impact is in the real world. And Ewan, I think this was going to be your kind of longer-term Windows Phone device, you thought?
A purple one would have been long-term.
Yeah, well, fortunately, the covers are removable, so we'll have to
orange
see.
Orange is quite nice.
I don't think they do orange for the 820 yet, although I think more colours will come out in due course. But the covers, or the shells, I should call them, aren't available in retail just yet, as far as we know. But I do know they're going to cost about £20. I wonder if that price will come down at all, because that does seem a rather excessive margin for a
I want to say
plastic.
One more thing about the shells.
Oh, go on then, Ewan.
Okay, no, that's a practical one. Because you have one for wireless charging. Yep. So if you take the back of the 820, you can see that you've got the charging pins.
Yes.
Right, so, shell manufacturers out there, this is what I want from you. I want a shell that adds another 6 millimeters of depth to the phone, and I want it full of a battery cell. And you can use these little prongs, so you could basically put another battery cell on the back of this one to recharge it. You can just like the Mophies on the iPhones and the Android Galaxy devices. We can have that on the 820. Just strap me a great big battery in the back for when I go traveling, so I can get 3 solid days of battery life out of one charge, out of my extra battery case and built-in battery.
Okay, well, there we go. That's a challenge for accessory manufacturers. I like it just the way it is, because I don't want any extra thickness on it.
That's because you're a Lionel Richie fan.
Yeah, well, I should just say yes to that and pretend
Do you know who Lionel Richie is?
Well, I recognise the name. I'm just trying to remember anything that he's written. Or sung.
Love you just
say.
The way you are.
Okay, yes, fair enough. That is a very good summary.
Try and please me.
Okay. So we've had probably enough of us rambling back and forth to each other. Thank you for your feedback. And we have actually got some questions coming, and we'll try and get to those next week. But it's also going to be time for the Christmas podcast, so we're going to have to come up with something suitably exciting for that. If you've got any ideas, please let us know.
I've got an idea.
Excellent. Well, save it for next week, Ewan.
Oh, okay.
Keep them in suspense. You need them to come and listen to the next week's podcast.
Okay. Okay. Right. Okay, we'll do that then. Is that enough suspense?
It is enough suspense. Yeah, okay, maybe we should say goodbye now. I mean, thank you, everybody, for listening and sitting through another of our All About Windows Phone podcasts.
Yep, indeed. Thank you all out there. Myself, Ewan Spence, and Ray Blanford, all available in contact through the website, Twitter, Facebook's Hurdle Pile, all the usual social media networks. www.allaboutwindowsphone.com to leave your comments, your questions, your appreciations, felicitations, and what you think we can do for our Christmas episode, which honestly, I'm not quite sure beyond make Rafe sing a carol.
Or even allaboutwindowsphone.com, because there's no www. But yes, come back next week for, well, maybe not me singing carols, because I want you to actually listen to future podcasts, but come back for the big number 50 Christmas special.
Ooh,
exciting.
I protect you from the hooded claw.